The first thing I actually wanted to ask you was this. You know, you are one of horror and vampire books. You know, when it comes to that, you're one of the most prolific writers that I know. And you've recently, of course, come out with Vampiric Variations, which is a collection of your short stories. And what I wanted to know, as far as this book is concerned, could you give us pretty much a rundown of what the readers are to expect from this book?
This is there's a collection of seven of my stories in there. These are stories that people don't necessarily get their hands on easily, so that's why I put them in there.
Right.
And also there are three novellas in there, which are very long, short stories. So one of them is a brand new story at the end, which takes place in Germany,
right,
with a German girl and a Transylvanian vampire. Check it out.
Awesome. And I actually wanted to ask, when it comes to, you know, because obviously this is like a collected works, shall we say, of what you've done short story-wise, what I want to know is, when it actually comes to sitting down and writing a story, what would you say, how do you actually start, and how do you start, and how do you plan it? I mean, does it just, you just sit down and just all flows, or do you already have a preconceived idea and you already know what you're going to be writing?
You know, it really depends, Nick. I mean, a lot of times I'm asked to write a story for an anthology, and so I get the theme of the anthology, and sometimes there are fairly specific guidelines of what they're looking for.
Right.
You know, for example, there's a Cthulhu anthology that I'm in, so obviously the stories relate to Cthulhu, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if it's something specific like that, then I'm thinking along the lines of that theme and that subject matter and trying to come up with an idea that hasn't been done before, which is really, you know, thinking up an idea and then checking out that it hasn't been done before, because obviously I can't read everything in the world, but, you know, mostly when you come up with an idea as a writer, your idea is usually unique. It's usually not duplicating somebody else's, and even if you have duplicated an idea, because there's only so many ideas, then your take on it is very different. It's yours, so you're doing it differently than it has been done before. So there's that. And then every once in a while, I'm writing. I used to do this more, you know, when I was younger in my early days as a writer, but every once in a while now, I still just write a story because I want to, because it comes out of my head and I have no market for it, but there it is. It has to come out, so that's the way it goes. And Wild Hunt, which is the story I mentioned in Vampiric Variations, that story was one of those. It just came out of me.
Right. Well, I mean, and I think it's amazing, you know, how you're just able to do this off the top of your head, as it were. You know, I mean, that's really something very impressive. I mean, I wish personally I was able to do such things. And, you know, when it comes to the subject matter, and when it comes to vampires mainly, I mean, I know that obviously your subject matter varies, but I know that one of your main focal points are vampires. And seeing that, you know, so many things have been written when it comes to vampires and so much has been done, how do you think is it able to keep a subject that has been going on for such a long time fresh and new and, you know, keep it alive?
Well, one of the things about vampires and me is that I have read a lot. I have a huge library. It's about 2,000 titles, and I've read all those books, all those vampire books, more than any normal human being should read and still be able to talk coherently. I hope I'm talking coherently. But basically, I know what has been done in the past, which is why I did those anthologies a couple of years ago, Evolved Vampire Stories of the New Undead, and then the sequel, Evolve 2, Vampire Stories of the Future Undead, because I knew what had been done already. I knew what had been written in this particular subgenre, if you will. So I was able to know what was new and what was fresh. And my writing, I guess, comes in that same way. Now, obviously, I'm not reading every type of horror that there is. I read zombie stuff, but I don't read every zombie book that's out.
No.
So when I write a zombie story, I don't really know that it hasn't been done, but I just kind of take it on faith that what I'm doing is my perspective on things, and it's not going to be, you know, covering ground that has already been covered. And that's so far so good. That's worked out. I think reading is the key for a lot of writers, and you know, that's not the only thing, though. You know, you read, you watch movies, you watch television series, and read comic books, and, you know, you just talk to people, and you go on vampire hunts or zombie walks around Halloween, and you get different ideas on things, and hope that your ideas are, because you have a kind of a fuller perspective on the subject matter, you hope your ideas have not been done before.
Right, and you were mentioning, of course, TV and cinema and so on. I mean, as we know, of course, the silver screen has paid homage to vampires in so many different ways. I mean, if we go all the way back to, say, Nosferatu by Murnau and go up to, shall we say, Twilight now, I mean, I'm sure you've seen quite a few when it comes to movies of and vampires and such. Has there been a movie that you've seen where, shall we say, you either left the cinema rather disappointed, or you thought to yourself, this is not the way vampires should be portrayed, or and was there ever a movie where you told yourself, they've really nailed it?
I'm sorry, Nick, I'm a vampire slut. I will watch anything, I will listen to anything, I will read anything, I like it all. So I'm just basically there with it all, and I don't care if it's horrible and really bad and beyond B and to C and D and Z. I don't care about that. I watch it because I find the subject matter interesting. I find something in there that, for me, is going to work. So, yeah, I mean, I've even thrown books across the room but then gone and picked them up and finished reading them.
Right. And also, you know, I've been, of course, this collection of short stories that written by you that will be raised, which, and I know that you're going to be launching this actually on Halloween.
Yes, I am in Toronto at Nocturne Nightclub, which is a goth club in Toronto.
Right,
it's going to be cool, actually. We're going to have a vampire kissing booth.
Oh, wow. Okay, that would be something.
Where you get tattooed, temporary tattoos, vampire bites. We've got a woman who's playing cello who recites dark lyrics as she does it. And there's also an actor going to be there who's dressed as a vampire who's interviewing me. So we're calling it Interview with a Vampire Writer by the Vampire.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm sure that will definitely be very, very cool.
It's going to be fun, yeah.
And actually, speaking of this, when you've actually had the chance to meet your readers, have they pretty much always been what you expected, or have you ever sort of come across people that, you know, getting to meet them, you never think they would pick up and read a book of yours, as in, you know, when it comes to vampires and such?
I don't think I've ever had, like, an idea of who my readers would be. There's a lot of different types of readers. You know, there's older readers, younger readers. There's all kinds of readers. And my books have been translated into different languages, so I get people from, you know, Spanish speakers and Italian readers and all kinds of people, you know, so from all over the world. So basically I don't really know who my readers are, and they all kind of surprise me in a way, and I'm always thrilled that people find something of value in what I write. That's not a given, you know. You're a writer, you're living in your own head, as it were, your own world, your own realm, and I guess, you know, you're mucking around with your own soul, and you're pulling out things and putting them on the page, and you send them out there, and you have no idea if anybody else is going to relate to this or not. And I'm usually always surprised when people do. Even now, after all these years of writing, I'm still touched very deeply when people write to me or contact me in some way or see me at a convention, and they come up and they tell me how much the books mean to them. I'm very touched by this, because it's a connection with another human being.
Definitely, and I think it's great to be able to reach out and touch somebody with something that you've created. I think that's definitely an amazing feeling. And I know that, as we were saying, other than, of course, than Vampiric Variations, I know that also you were editing, and you finished editing another anthology, which is Dance Macabre. And as far as that is concerned, could you give us a rundown of what that is all about?
Yeah, the anthology is called Dance Macabre, Close Encounters with the Reaper. And this anthology comes out of a long-term love of mine of a particular artwork that started in the 1400s in France. And there's maybe 50 pieces of this artwork that still exist in Europe. And they're from the 14, there's very little from the 1400s, 1500s, 1600s, 1700s, a little bit from the 1800s. Basically, it's an artwork that's also been called plague art. The artwork started on the wall of a cemetery in Paris. An anonymous artist came and painted these images of death and in the form of a skeleton leading a person into a dance, come dance with me and die kind of thing. So it's the formerly living leading the living who are dying into the other realm. And this was painted on the inside of, well, what they called the cemetery. It was actually the boneyard back then. And then someone else came along and put some poetry to it. And at that time, mostly what they had were images of the kings and the queens and the lawyers and the popes and the clergy and the upper crust, as it were. And it was to tell everyone, especially the poor, who were the ones who were hit so drastically by the plagues in Europe, that death is the great equalizer. It hits everyone. Everyone is going to die, whether they're rich or poor, whether they're male or female, or whether they're young or old. It doesn't matter. At some point, we all face this. It's meant to give kind of a bit of comfort in that kind of equality, and also the idea that we are destined to this, and we have to meet this fate in some way. When you look at the images which exist in the 50 pieces that are probably still around, there's all kinds of death in there. And I was trying to do this with the anthology, pick out stories that reflected how the skeletons work, because sometimes they're mean, you know, and yeah, they're cruel, and sometimes they're funny, and sometimes they imitate people to try and get a confidence going. There's one I just saw recently when I was in Switzerland, and it's a skeleton who's pretending to have one leg, like the beggar that has a leg that he's trying to entice over. And it's kind of like, I'm just like you, come on with me, I know what it's like to have one leg. And so there's all types in there, you know. It's a funny kind of a presentation, and it's an artwork that isn't very well known. Certainly there's only a handful of people interested in this that go around the world like me and look it at for it in every... And in Italy, where you're located, you've got quite a few pieces. I've been to Italy and I've seen, I guess about maybe 10 different old artworks there.
Oh, yes, for sure. I mean, throughout this country, there is just so much of that kind of artwork. And Baksha, when it comes to your personal view of death and the afterlife, How do you perceive all this? I mean, what would you say is your personal view on death, and what comes after, if anything comes after that?
I honestly don't have a clue. I'm aware since childhood. I'm one of those people that has been aware of death. It's on my shoulder like a raven, and you know, it's just there, and I'm very aware of that state that we will all move to, that I will move to. And I've just been so aware of it, it can happen at any moment. And I think it's made me live my life in a certain way, because I have an urgency about me that, has to do with that. What happens after, I don't know. I'm not particularly religious, but I am spiritual. I don't know, what deities there are, if there aren't any.
I don't know.
So I'm kind of open. I guess you'd call me an agnostic, because I don't know anything. I like the concept of the skeleton, the hand that reaches to you and helps you come over to another place. And some people have envisioned that as family members. In my case, I hope that's not so. Those are people that I would prefer. It's always varies, from person to person, how they envision these things. I don't really have a clear sense. Do you?
Well, honestly, not really. I mean, I have, I think, like everybody, you sort of think about, you can't stop but think about it sometimes, and I guess you always try to see of seizing the day because of that, because you never know, I suppose, when this journey we have in life will end, so I've always pretty much been one of those kind of carpe diem kind of people for that for that reason,
But, and carpe noctem too.
Exactly. And in this case, carpe noctem for sure. And as we were saying, you're an author and you're an editor, and you've also worked in radio yourself, and have had the chance to measure yourself, I guess we could say, with various mediums. Which would you say has been the most fun? I'm sure, obviously, you're very attached to being in, just writing stories, but what would you say is the experience that you enjoyed the most, like radio or so on? And is there something, any new experiences, any new ideas that you would like to venture, or any new realms you would like to explore as far as that goes?
I think I'm not really a performer person. I'm not wholly comfortable talking, if that comes across. But, you know, essentially, I like to be alone. I like to write. And I like to live in my own world, my own head. So I think for me, writing is pretty much it. Mm. I've tried a lot of different medias, comic books, for example, and various other things. But I would like to actually have one of my works turned into a movie. That hasn't happened. Hey, anybody out there listening want to do that, get in touch with me. I've had my books optioned a few times, but the movie industry is a very tough industry to get things actualized in. And, you know, they haven't gotten that far to be made into a film. So that's an area I'd like to explore. I don't necessarily know if I'd wanted to be a screenwriter or partly screenwriter collaborator on that. I don't know if I'd be any good at it. But I would like to see the process. That would be interesting to me.
I was just going to say about actually turning your stories into a movie, you know, maybe merging them together to create a movie, because your writing is very visual, and you definitely know how to paint pictures in people's minds. So I think they would be able to make some awesome movies out of your stories.
And that would be great. I would love that to happen. And, you know, it's curious because that's always, personally, it is a weakness with me. I'm not a visual person. So I have had to work hard in my writing to become visual because it's not natural. For example, I'll tell you a little story. A friend of mine was staying here while I was in Europe for a couple of weeks, and one time I mentioned, I would love to have my bathroom painted. My bathroom was black.
Right.
It was black. And I came home, and we were talking in the kitchen. I said, let's be right back and use the bathroom. So I turned on the light, you know, which is at the door, right? And it's bright in here. Did you change the light bulb or something? He had painted my bathroom white. Now, it had gone from black to white.
Wow.
It took me a couple of minutes to realize, and he was laughing himself silly. Of course, I didn't laugh that a lot in my life over things like this, but it's typically me to not see what's in front of me. So for me, I had to work really hard with writing and make a conscious effort to always go back to the piece and say, how can I make this more visual, more vivid? What do I see in my head? And that's hard to do because I don't see necessarily in colors or shapes, and try to kind of focus on that so that I can bring it out in the writing. But I think my writing is visual. People have said that a lot to me, that they can see it very easily. So hopefully I've done the right thing.
Yes. Well, definitely, and as I was saying, I definitely think that Hollywood should definitely take a chance. As I was saying, you know, of course you're an author and you are an editor as well. When it actually comes to editing other people's work, how do you go about it? I mean, in the sense that I think it must be kind of, to me, I don't know where I would start, honestly, when it comes to editing, you know, other people's writing. How do you go about it?
Well, I've read a lot, I've written a lot. I do trust my vision of things, and I do have a pretty good heart. I'm not out to destroy anybody. I'm out to look at a story and say, this story is really good, it could be great. And I have a good ability to analyze writing. I also teach writing, so you know, that's part of what I do as well. I have part-time writing courses that I teach for a school, and that's online school, by the way. So you know, I'm used to doing this, and I've done a lot of anthologies. I've edited about 13 now. If I read a story and I see it's a gem, I just want it to be really good. And sometimes writers don't see the little bits that should be sharpened or cut away to make it shine more. Mm-hmm. I only do that with stories that I'm interested in buying. If it's not a story that's going to work for me, if it's not already at a certain stage, then I'm not hired to kind of work with somebody for months and months to get their story up to a certain level. I'm looking at stories that are pretty well there or almost there, and some stories are perfect. They're just utterly perfect, every word. So it depends on what it is, but I do trust myself. And, of course, it's always up to the writer. I mean, I make suggestions, so it's up to the writer whether they want to change a story or not, always. There's no pushing. It's just, you know, this is what I see. This is how I think it could be better. And, you know, most people do trust me, it seems, working with them.
I can't remember. And naturally, I mean, one would trust somebody like yourself, you know, who's been in the business for quite some time and knows what they're doing. I mean, no doubt about that. And, you know, you've, of course, you've written a lot of fiction, but you've also written some non-fiction. Of course, actually, one of my personal favorite books, the Goth Bible. And when it actually comes to writing non-fiction, is there anything in the works as far as doing possibly a follow-up to that, or writing any more non-fiction or anything that, should we say, resembles the Goth Bible?
I think there probably wouldn't be a sequel, a Son of Goth Bible or anything, just because that, in a way, it's not that Goth is over, it's just that the time for that sort of thing has passed.
Hmm.
I like doing that. It was a huge project. It took me 2 years. Yeah. It was a lot of work. But it was really fun to do it, and I'm glad I had some nonfiction, you know, background writing articles for newspapers and magazines. It helped tremendously. I did a hell of a lot of interviews for it with just regular goths, you know, there were close to 100 of them, and I did all kinds of other people that ran stores and musicians and people that had magazines and radio people and all kinds of people, everybody, you know, comics, artwork, everything. So there's a lot of interviews in there and a lot of material that came out of the interviews. It was a wonderful project to do. It was really amazing. People were so generous and kind with their time, artists giving their artwork for the book, photographers. I mean, it was really a beautiful experience, the book. So I enjoyed doing it, and I'd be up for some other nonfiction project if it was something that touched me and grabbed me. I don't really think there's room for another Goth book. Other people have also done Goth things. There's a nice book that's come out in Canada called Encyclopedia Gothica. It really is like an encyclopedia with little, alphabetized inserts of different aspects of Goth. And certainly Voltaire has done a lot of stuff in terms of Goth. He's got the book Oh My Goth and stuff. So, there's a lot of things out there, and I don't really know if there's room for another book. There's certainly not for me, not of that ilk. That time, in a way, is over what I presented. So it's a different realm now to me, and different era.
Right. And speaking of new eras, what would you say the future now holds for Nancy Kilpatrick? And, what are we to expect from you in the future?
Well, there's another anthology I'm probably going to edit. I'm seeing the editor at the publishing house soon, and it's probably a go. So that'll be out next year, I don't want to give the title yet until it's absolutely a go. And I've been working, speaking of doing spontaneous things, I've had this love of a project that I'm doing for myself that's not, I haven't approached a publisher at all yet, so it's, there are 7 novels. I'm writing them all at once, because wow. I'm crazy. Just because it's a world and there are different characters in each novel, but they're all part of the same world. So I write according to how I feel that day, and if I feel like writing these particular characters, I do, and if I don't, I write other characters. So there are 7 of them, and they're all novels. They'll be in the 100,000 word range. The first one is done. The next 3 are about 60,000 words in. So they're all just going along, and at some point I'll make an effort to do something with them, but. Yeah, I've had this excitement about it, and I just want to pursue it, so we'll see where it goes.
Oh, definitely. And the last question I had for you, Nancy, was for all those, you know, young authors out there, or those who are thinking of, you know, becoming authors, what advice can you give them as far as how one, what is the best way to start out?
I think reading is always good. The more you read, the more you learn. People take in what they are reading, in a way, by osmosis. They're, you know, absorbing it into their system. And you get to be a better writer by reading, because you see how other people write. There's that. But there's also writing. You just have to keep writing. And it's not just a question of writing one thing and saying, this is brilliant and the world should accept it. And you'll probably get a lot of rejection, so you have to keep writing. Just keep at it, because it's one of those things, the more you do, the better you get, and the more chance you have of getting published. There's a lot of ways of being published these days with things like e-books, and a lot of people are publishing their own books. There are, you know, limitations to that, of course, but there's also a certain gratification to being able to get your book out there, and you have some copies, and you give it to friends, you know, for an evening. You know, there is that. It gets people started. I think you just have to keep going, believe in yourself, which means being open to things, but at the same time having a kind of basic belief in you. And it's the rejection that is very hard to handle. And even after years, people get very upset at rejection. So you just have to try to build up enough skin that's hard like a rhino so that you can get through this very difficult business, and just believe that what you're doing is important and special for you, and it deserves a place in the world.
Well, words of wisdom from definitely an extremely talented author. Well, Nancy, I wanted to thank you, of course, very, very much for your time. And as always, it was a great pleasure to have you as a guest. And of course, I want to wish you the best of luck with this Vampiric Variations, of course, and this anthology that you edited, and all your future projects as well.
Oh, thank you, Nick. It's been wonderful being on your show again. I really like you, your show, and this has been a nice opportunity for me. Thank you so much.
Nope.
And happy Halloween.
Oh, happy Halloween to you too. All right, well,